I'm Grant, an engineering and technology leader who will share the secrets of IT with you. Listen up, because we're about to get into it. Hey, Grant here. It's been a while since I've put out an episode, but that's because I've been busy. No doubt, like many of you as well. I've been having a lot of very interesting conversations recently about AI that I wanted to share with you. Companies seem to be out of the shock phase, and now they're into the quote-unquote, how can we integrate large language models and profit from them phase. So unlike crypto and blockchain, I believe that large language models, or LLMs, actually do solve a problem that we've been struggling with for decades, and that's natural language processing. You know, blockchain and crypto, those were really solutions looking for a problem as I've seen them implemented and used, whereas we don't know how to process natural language yet. And so the neural networks, the LLMs, ChatGPT, those technologies here, I think they've already got a situation where they can be applied to. And that is why I believe these are not just a passing fad, but these are things that are here to stay. You see, the structure of language is nonlinear. What I mean by that is that words and sentences are not self-contained. Language is built on symbols and on signs that have an arbitrary relationship with language itself. The meanings of these symbols and signs are derived from their cultural, contextual, and individual interpretations. Furthermore, the same word can mean many things based on even just the emphasis of its syllables. This can only really be understood in the context of the sentence or maybe even the topic of the conversation that they're embedded in. For example, a desert is a place with very little water, or you could desert a building, or you can suspect the truth or follow a suspect. Those words are overloaded with a meaning coming from their surrounding context, because it's the same letters on the page, it's just the emphasis of the syllables that are different, and you emphasize it different based on the context. So think about this with me for a second. What kind of algorithm would you even need to create to process this fundamental complexity, the intrinsic nature of language? And the answer, as far as I'm aware, is there are no algorithms to process this complexity. There may be some heuristics, which are non-deterministic, kind of finger-in-the-wind approaches to processing data, but it wasn't until large language models appeared on the scene that this problem seems to actually finally be solved in some respects. I'm not saying that large language models are a silver bullet for language processing, but they do a very good job, with the occasional hallucination from time to time. Now, a hallucination, if you're not familiar, is a large language model making up things that aren't true and trying to pass them off as truths. You know, things that humans also do. If you lived prior to the time of Google, like I did, then you will remember, maybe not fondly, but you'll remember the fact that there used to be disagreements of opinion frequently. And what we would do is not look it up on Google, but in the moment, we would try and insist our side was correct, and then sometimes even make things up to bolster our case. And so in that day and age, the person who was maybe more charismatic or more insistent would win, regardless of what the actual truth was. Now, large language models seem to do the same thing from time to time. They're more forgiving, at least ChatGPT is. If you were to ask it a question and it makes up a hallucination, you can insist, if you know the right answer, kind of prod it in the right direction, and it'll give in and be like, oh, I'm sorry, I was wrong. So it's kind of cool to have that kind of a conversation with it, because what it does is really underline the point that these large language models, they're neural networks, kind of like our brains are. Like, they're a mathematical computer science representation of a brain, and they behave like it. ChatGPT does based on all of its training material. The CEO of OpenAI, Sam Altman, has even come out and said that hallucinations are not a flaw in the model. They're kind of a feature. Feature, not a bug, as they say. And there's no way that we can really get rid of these behaviors entirely, because it's part of the training data of as to why they behave this way in the first place. So a neural network behaves completely different than a classical algorithm does. It actually introduces entropy into the conversation. It creates chaos to have a semi-random output. If you've ever used ChatGPT with the API on the back end, you can set those parameters to see how chaotic you want the output to be or how deterministic you want it to be as well. So there's some neat things that you can do with the API if you get into it at that level. But ChatGPT is a very different approach to solving large language issues or language issues than a classic algorithm was. But it did take a ludicrous amount of data to train this neural network on, costing between $2 and $12 million per training session, and it runs on infrastructure that's valued at over $100 billion. Those numbers are staggering to me, but this is a very amazing and very scary tool that we now have at our disposal that solves the problem of processing natural language. So where am I headed with this? The AI revolution is real. This isn't a fad. This isn't going to go away like NFTs did. Large language models solve real problems and make language processing natural and high quality. LLMs are good at tasks humans do. They're a neural network like we are. And they seem to be bad at tasks that classic algorithmic approaches are good at, like doing math, for example. There are countless examples where ChatGPT outputs incorrect answers to math problems, although that gap is closing. I did ask it what 10 plus 10 was, and it told me 20. Now, if I ran that test over 1,000 times, it may not tell me 20 every time, but more than likely, it's going to tell me 20. And so the gap's closing, even though it's not perfect. Because again, there's that aspect of entropy. Adding entropy makes the output more variable, so you get more creative output, and it's less likely to say the same thing to you over and over again, which is what you want in language, storytelling, all of that stuff. But it's not what you want when you follow an algorithm. Algorithms are deterministic. They always do the same thing every single time you run them. So you can see that based on what kind of a task that you want to perform, you will either be more likely to use an LLM to get the best results or use a classical algorithm, or maybe even some other approach. If you're a fan of This Old House, Tom Silva likes to say the right tool for the right job, and that is definitely the same thing here. Large language models for certain jobs, algorithms for other jobs, heuristics for other types of problems. Now, I used that term before, heuristic. If you're not familiar with what a heuristic is, it's basically just a rule of thumb. When a certain situation happens, then generally perform a certain action. Okay, it's not codified, it's not followed to the T every single time an event occurs like an algorithm is. It's just a general guideline. So moving on here a little bit, ChatGPT can speak over 95 human languages if you're not aware. It can also generate code because software coding languages are, surprise, also languages at the end of the day. So what does this mean? Ironically, ChatGPT knows how to produce algorithms, even though it doesn't truly know how to use algorithms, at least not in my testing. This has taken our tech giants down the path to creating tools that generate code. The key here is prompting the LLM correctly. And I'm talking about GitHub's Copilot, or SourceGraph's Cody, or Salesforce's Einstein for Developers, and there are probably more out there that I don't know about. And this is great, right? After all, research from Harvard Business School shows that using AI will speed you up 25%, increase your performance by 40%, and also make you more likely to actually complete a task by 12%. So what is there not to embrace about this fact? Well, I've seen the code generated by these tools. Yes, it actually does do a pretty darn good job, in my opinion, of generating code that you ask for. It does speed me up, but I also know what I'm doing already. I'd compare it kind of to like a calculator. It speeds you up, but if you're not doing math right in the first place, then you're just producing a lot of really wrong numbers very quickly. And large language models are exactly this, but for code. If it generates code, then you need to be able to program already to check that code for quality and make sure that it's going to do what you want it to do. This means you need to already be a programmer. Let's go down a rabbit hole for a second. Got a really good story that I think illustrates my concern with code generation tools. Bear in mind, I'm pro code generation tool. Okay, I don't want that to come across as any other way, but I do also have concerns, and we need to put some safeguards in place to protect ourselves, especially if we're going to be shipping code from large language models into production. So I know a guy. This guy, he's classic. He wants to get rich. We all do. But he wants to get rich quick. Now, he had an idea, and he wanted me to share my opinion with him on it. You see, he talked to ChatGPT, and he asked it to write some code for him that would go onto the crypto marketplace and buy crypto low and sell it high. It's a perfect example of getting ChatGPT to make your life better, isn't it? Well, he sent me his code, and there were some issues with it. And he had ChatGPT do a revision, and he sent it back to me. And I noticed something in his code that was really interesting. And it was a fact that there was a less than or greater than sign that had been reversed. So his code was going to be buying high and selling low, the exact opposite of what he wanted it to do. And the code worked otherwise, but it all came down to that one less than or greater than sign being flipped. Can you imagine what would have happened to his bank account if he had run that code in production? It would have rapidly depleted to zero. And these are the kind of pernicious flaws that can be generated by large language models that will probably go unnoticed until the code is actually doing something in production. It's debatable that a peer review ever would have found this bug. It really is a functional, a behavioral aspect of the code that was flawed. And those behaviors are sometimes very difficult to find. Now, I think in this situation, it's very obvious. If you're buying low, selling high, buying high, selling low, that's an easy behavior to automate a test for. But there are going to be other ones that are more of a needle in a haystack problem. And there probably are ones in production right now, given the widespread use of ChatGPT. So just something to be on the lookout for as you or your own companies start to use these LLMs to generate code. Now, I don't want to end this topic on a low note, because there are tools in the market today that can help you with this problem. If you're familiar with Cucumber, there is a new tool out called CodeWarden. If you use GitHub or Bitbucket to store your code, and you use Jira to store your requirements, then every time your code changes, CodeWarden will go out and compare your code to the requirements to make sure it's functionally going to do what the stores wanted it to do in the first place. It doesn't matter if a human wrote the code or if an AI wrote the code. CodeWarden is a quality check to make sure it's working. It can check for behavioral flaws, security flaws, regulatory and compliance issues, you name it. Go check it out, CodeWarden.ai. The product is out in the Atlassian marketplace, so just install it in your Jira instance and add their GitHub action or Bitbucket pipeline to your code repository and you're off and running. There's no other setup required. Unlike tools like Cucumber that require some level of training to use them, you're basically codifying your requirements in Jira, CodeWarden reads the requirements in whatever native language they use and will post an analysis back to your code to say whether or not it's compliant to the specifications. So I thought it was pretty cool. It does help solve this problem of poor code quality or behavioral flaws in AI-generated code. So this is the beginning of the emergence of a whole slew of quality tools that take advantage of large language models. All right, well, now let's get back to my point. I think I've taken us down a rabbit hole long enough. Now, the quality of code getting generated by AI is top of my mind as an engineering leader. And I don't know if I've said it on the podcast yet, but we are about to unleash a machine gun of terrible code into production, potentially. People who are weak engineers or non-engineers are going to be generating code that they can't understand and shipping it into production because it feels good enough to them. And I'm not saying this to put down or demean non-technical people. They just don't have the skills to know if the code is good or not, and they don't have any data driving the decision as to whether or not this code should be in production. A lot of people fall back on that gut feel, which is a really bad way of assessing whether or not you've built good code. And fact of the matter is, there are already CEOs laying off entire departments and outsourcing job functions into AI. So it's just a matter of time, and this is the point where prompt engineering comes into play. The main aspect to getting AI to produce what you want is telling it to do the right thing in just the right way. Generating good prompts for an AI system means understanding the task that you want it to perform, and then explicitly guiding the LLM to do it. You can even have the LLM tell you what you should prompt it and iterate on your prompt by sending your initial prompt in and having it critique it, basically. And then it'll improve it, and you can use that new prompt. And oddly enough, this actually works really well. So there are some tricks to this whole prompt engineering thing, which is why it's emerging as a new job. Now, in full transparency, I really was harsh on the idea of prompt engineering even being a thing the first time I heard the term being used. I thought it was ridiculous, but the longer I've interacted with LLMs, the more I've learned that there really is an art to getting them to do what you want. Whether it is actually an LLM like ChatGPT or a different system like DALL-E that takes text and produces an image, you can instruct them well or poorly and get dramatically different output. I mean, obviously, right? It's not rocket science, but perhaps I shouldn't have been so dismissive of this fundamental and critical aspect of using these tools. It all comes down to stream of consciousness, and I said this in another episode, but but I personally don't know where this sentence is going to go before I finish it. The words just sort of emerge one after another, and I know, like, consciously where the topic is headed, and I know what the point I'm trying to make is, but we all just kind of say words one after another, and we edit them as we talk, and sometimes we even backtrack to correct ourselves. We'll say things like, oh, I'm sorry, I misspoke, what I really meant was, and the AI can't do this. It simply acts like a stream of consciousness, and you kind of get what you get. That's why you have to prompt it to correct itself sometimes or check its work. So prompting is important and feedback's important. Prompt engineering considers this stream of consciousness method of producing output and brings it into play as the prompts are being created. So there's more to it as well. So think of in terms of like solving a problem, okay? There are techniques to getting an answer from AI. For example, one technique is least to most prompting. And this prompts a model to first list all of the subproblems to a problem and then solve them in sequence so that the later subproblems can be solved with the help of answers to previous subproblems. So you're producing outputs that prime the AI with relevant information to solve the later problems. Isn't that cool? Like I think it is, because you're helping the AI know how to work through the problem. There's a similar concept called chain of thought prompting. And in this one, you solve a big problem as a series of intermediate steps before you get to the final answer. So you and I, we do this all the time. A good example is like a multi-step equation. So you have 30 candy bars and you give away 25 at Halloween, but then you buy 3 to keep around the house. So how many candy bars do you have? Well, first you'd solve 30 minus 25, which equals 5. Then you'd solve 5 plus 3, which equals 8. So the final answer is you have 8 candy bars now. And by prompting an AI with a question, how many candy bars do I have? Let's think this through step by step. That last part, let's think this through step by step, is the key. You'll encourage the AI to generate an answer in that format chain of thought, where they spell out the 25 or the 30 minus 25 and then the 5 plus 3. And what you're going to do is encourage that AI to get a better answer as a result, because it's going to use all of that generated logic and the multi-step math problem as it tries to find the answer. So it's going to be more likely to generate the right answer, even though it's not actually doing math, as I said before, but it's solving a series of problems. So there is some intelligence, obviously, AI, artificial intelligence, there is some intelligence here behind the logic, but as a prompt engineer, as a person prompting the AI, you can help it produce better output by really thinking through your prompts and how you're instructing the AI to behave. And now this is where it gets really cool to me, because it brings into focus how neural networks are just like the human brain. We can do this with people too. So how you ask a question can produce good or bad responses, right? I'll use myself as an example here. It's sort of like when I go about interviewing someone. I'm trying to get them to answer my question. I don't necessarily care about the answer itself, so to say. What I'm trying to do is figure out how they problem solve. So my job is to create an environment where they feel comfortable talking with me, and then I can ask them my questions and lead them through the problem by prompting them just right so that we can work through it together and I can see how they problem solve. Because really their skill level comes down to how they approach a problem, not necessarily if they get the right answer in a timed interview with me. It's do they have the necessary skill to seek out the answer if given enough time in a not quite so stressful or high pressure situation. So I believe that prompt engineering is definitely going to become much more mainstream as we move into the future. So let me get out my crystal ball here right next to me. I'm gonna go ahead and predict the future for you. I personally believe that currently we've got engineers building code, and some engineers are using ChatGPT or other tools to generate at least some or much of their code base. And that kind of use of AI is going to become much more widespread. At some point in time, the number of engineering jobs is going to decrease. There will be a lead engineer, perhaps, who reviews all of the AI-generated code to make sure that it's safe to release and does what the requirements specified in the first place. And this is where I think tools like CodeWarden come in that I had mentioned earlier. That's the feedback loop for AI to stay on target and be able to check its own work. So the next step is going to be no software engineers at all. Instead, what we're going to have is prompt engineers who work with their business partners directly to generate good stories or really good business requirements, and the AI is just going to read in these business requirements and generate the code. Isn't that going to be wild? Like, you write your business requirements and then just get a product. It doesn't, if it doesn't do quite what you want it to do, then you change your requirements and regenerate it. And I bet someone out there is even thinking of the next step after this, which is you'll tell the AI what your problem is, and it's going to actually design the solution and generate the product for you. So I don't have a timetable on when all of this stuff is going to change and happen to us, but I see the industry moving in this direction, and I'm very interested in what the future looks like. And I think at this point in time, it's really just a fun thought experiment, for me at least, and I don't want to scare anybody away from getting a computer science degree either, right? I personally think that those degrees are going to be highly useful and sought after for quite a long time in the future, as well as data engineering degrees. But I also think that there's something to this prompt engineering concept, and product development fundamentally is going to change. Now, I am but one guy who's been in tech for almost 2 decades now. So I've got opinions that have formed, and I've seen a lot of trends and fads come and go, and I truly believe AI is here to stay. But it's just my opinion, and I would actually love to hear what your opinion is. What do you think is going to happen in the future as these large language models continue to get more and more good at what they do, and potentially even surpass what a human's capable of doing? In fact, I'd go so far as to say it's a sure bet that they're going to surpass what humans are capable of doing. I mean, I think in some respects, if you've seen what ChatGPT-4 is able to do, it already can do a better job than many humans can at a variety of tasks. The power of these tools is outrageously exciting to me. I don't see a dystopian future where these tools take our jobs and then we're left with nothing. I really believe that we're going to be able to figure out how to move forward with this technology, much like Henry Ford was able to build a car, and horse and buggies may have disappeared, but people didn't lose their entire livelihoods because Ford built a car. What happened was this gradual ramp up of the technology incorporating itself into people's lives, and what we got were new jobs, new economy, new ways of living. And so I think we're at the forefront of this with AI. Like, the tools can do a thing, but now it's time to lay down the equivalent of the car's infrastructure. They needed roads to be built to use the cars efficient. They needed new types of tires, new types of research and development on engines. And then we got to certain speeds and we needed to start thinking about crumple zones in cars. And it's like this really big thing that just morphed over a long period of time. And humans went along on the ride with it. And we helped make it better so that we could travel from, I don't know, Texas to California in a matter of a couple of hours, more than a couple of hours, like 20 hours, whatever it is, on a car, enjoying the scenery between these two places. And that's something that you had never been able to do before we had the infrastructure for the cars to go on and cars that can go fast enough. Same thing's true about airplanes. I mean, it's a revolutionary new world that we're about to head into. And I'm very excited about the possibilities that are right in front of us. So again, just my opinion, but I would love to hear yours. So with that, what I'll do is drop a post on LinkedIn, and I hope to hear from you there. So head to grantdryden.com to find all of my social media accounts and start connecting with me, send me emails, all that fun stuff. I love talking with y'all. So on that note, thanks for listening to me, and I will talk with you again soon. I'm not going to do that.